Hey
Thanks,
guys,
man.
in a world where creativity knows no bounds, the marriage of art, mathematics, and activism weaves a tapestry of understanding, transcending barriers, and uniting diverse voices in a symphony of enlightenment and compassion. Today, we have Lee Malupi with us. They're not just an artist or a math enthusiast or an activist, they are all three. Lee takes stuff that makes us different and turns it into something that makes us understand each other better. So Lee uses math to tackle transphobia. That's going to be interesting to talk about. Breaking down walls and building bridges. Lee's not just about thinking differently. They're about living it and showing it through their art. So whether it's painting that makes you rethink identity or an equation that unravels a social stigma, Lee believes in making the complex simple and the hidden seen. So it's like magic, but the real kind of magic that educates and connects us. That's what makes Lee's work not just beautiful, but deeply human and incredibly important. So all I can say is let's learn about Lee, let's learn about art, let's learn about magic, and here we go. Lee, I am excited to have you here today.
Hi, I'm excited to be here.
Hey, who do you want to do a shout out to? Let's start the show that way.
I want to start with doing a shout out to a friend of mine who I'll keep anonymous because he is closeted, but who inspires me every day as he deals with challenges of family and just being queer in a world that isn't quite as accepting as it should be yet.
I think we need that kind of help from people, right? I mean, every once in a while, it's like just that little push behind makes you better and better. So shout out. Love that. So let's jump right into it. So share how you... like how your journey began. What did you do? Like your visual and performing artist and LGBTQ rights activist. How did it all start up with you?
So I will have to say these two journeys started years apart from each other. I've been singing and doing art and just trying to make stories for as long as I can remember. So the art has always been something that my family's been helping me along with to build my skills in. When I was 14, so 4 years ago, I started to suspect that I might be on the, I might have a different gender identity than the one I was assigned. And when I realized, it was a slow process of realizing that I was non-binary. And shortly after that is when I kind of, it was 2020. So it was when a lot of us were starting to be, on the political scene. But it was when I started having conversations and being exposed to many different viewpoints on the way that I was, some accepting and like open and some really not so much. So I started having debates, arguments with people mostly online over these things, but also with my own family as I fought for my own acceptance. And through doing that, I started to research, I started looking up many different types of like statistics and stories, which all helped me be able to build the opinions and viewpoints that I have today. And it was when I first went to an in-person protest this year, actually, as the political scene has just gotten more and more heated. It was when I first spoke in person in front of a lot of people and was told the kind of power that my voice had that I realized for sure that I was always going to need to be using my voice to help the people that are in my community. So
are you more, so you do art, what kind of art do you do specifically?
So I'm currently studying animation. I'm about to start with the Savannah College of Art and Design online. So that's very exciting. I'm going to go into animation and production design, but I've definitely dabbled in a bunch of different types of art. I'm very experienced in the performing arts. I can sing and play five instruments and act, both scripted and improv, which is just a very big passion of mine that I would also like to work in that industry. But yeah, pretty much visual and performing arts I've been experienced in most of those fields.
You know, I understand the activism, definitely. The art, definitely. I'm right there with you on the music and playing instruments. Now let's bring up the mathematics, right? So you blend math with your art. So give us some examples of math and art, because people don't often think of those together, but I think it's very viable.
Yeah, so especially on the animation scene, anything that you create, there is an element of math that goes into it, whether it be geometry, even like algebra can go into it. An example is in animation, when you're animating a character, every movement that you have works in arcs. And I remember the first time I was in my animation class, one of our projects was we had to make a ball bounce. It's a very, very baseline mm-hmm. project that pretty much every animator starts with. But one thing that my teacher gave me criticism on when I first tried is that my arcs between each bounce were not entirely even. And that kind of symmetry is actually something that current animation tech can help you actually do. And there's definitely an intense mathematic and engineering process that goes into that. And I think that's a really cool animation as a whole field is a really cool way that engineering and math mix together with art to help people create amazing things.
I love that. Now, the way you were talking, I was just thinking about like the ball bouncing and everything is an arc, right? Even this point on here is an arc to there, so.
Yeah, yeah, everything you're doing here is like an arc here. Like when I'm moving yeah. like my body as a thing, it's like if you're trying to animate me right now, you're working in like in a bunch of little arcs.
Okay, no more straight lines for me. I'm doing arcs from now on. No. Hey, so the thing that I think is amazing is you mentioned you do the math, right? And you've somehow mixed transphobia with math, and explain that to us. How does that happen?
So if anyone's not aware, we've had a massive rise in the last few years of anti-trans bills, mm-hmm. predominantly targeting trans kids and their access to gender-affirming care. And I've been in on that conversation a lot when that happens. And one of the most common arguments that I hear is that like kids don't know what they want yet. So when you have them take permanent changes like the opposite puberty, which is what HRT is, you run that risk of them developing permanent changes on their body that they regret. This is often shown by the people who detransition, who had access to gender affirming care as children and then went through the opposite puberty because of HRT and now find themselves like in the case of some women who've detransitioned with facial and body hair that it's going to be expensive to remove, with their like chests not having developed the way they would have, with their voice dropping in a way that they can't really reverse.
Right.
And I was thinking, yeah, but don't trans women go through the exact same changes if they don't have access to that care at the same age? And then I was thinking, okay, so we're thinking we would ban all access to that care to protect cis people from going through the same kind of dysphoria we'd be forcing trans people through. And then I was like, what's the detransition rate again? So I looked up how many people regret, subtracting the ones who regret because of societal reasons. Mm-hmm. And it turned out, after some calculations, it turned out that like this logic, this idea that like if you're going to like that it's worth it to put trans people through the same pain to protect cis people from it, places a trans person as approximately 647 times less valuable than a cis person. And I was like, that math's not mathing. No. Like this is why people go trans lives matter, because when you do these things, you're literally treating them like they don't, like they matter 647 times less. And I was like, wow, people need to see this. People need to see this in a way that is mathematical and just like logically sound, so that you can see exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Because it very much simplifies your ideas around making these decisions. Because yes, there are people who do just believe that trans people are worth that much less. But, you know, some people have good intentions, but don't really see the effects that this has.
So I have a question for you, because that math makes sense to me. Okay. Now, the problem that I see, and explain this, is like I watched a video the other day of someone who detransitioned, and they were before one of the House committees speaking about, like, you have to stop parents from doing this because it's just horrible. And that one single instance focused so that the whole country can see it makes it sound like everyone's in a bad place. So how do we get around the mathematics of that versus the pinpoint light spotlight that you put on people, making it look like everyone is making a horrible mistake and detransitioning is what everybody does?
So it's funny, because when I first heard detransitioners like talk about this and reach that conclusion of like, you can't let anyone do this, I definitely saw the effect of that. Mm-hmm. And what made it, like what put it into perspective was the opposite, was people, the trans people themselves and trans parents talking about how transition was liberating for them and like had reduced the dysphoria that had been such a big like weight on their lives, that gave them and their kids their smiles back, that made them able to live as normal a life as possible. And for me, that was personal, because I do have dysphoria, and it does inhibit parts of my life, huge parts that like normal most people don't have to deal with. And I'm thinking, yeah, if this suddenly stopped being a problem, if this was able to go away, if I was able to do things like swim and run and shower and sleep on my side without this inhibiting all of that, I would be fighting tooth and nail to not let people who never met me take that away.
What do you think it is? Like, what is it that causes the phobia in the first place? Why? Why are people afraid?
I find this in pretty much every type of bigotry, but it all starts with this aversion to the unknown. This, whoa, this challenges the structures that I've been used to for my entire life. This challenges the way that I've been taught to see the world. And that is scary. That's scary. And there's also this like, what right do you have to take away my sense of normalcy with your big, loud existence in my space? Stop shoving that down my throat. And it's like people, especially people who have grown up in the majority, often develop this sense that they have a right to a world that makes sense to them. They have a right to a space, a public space where people don't make them uncomfortable. And there's really no way to like convince someone that that's not true other than to just be like, get used to it.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is more powerful if we want to get people out of their fear mode? Is it the activism? Is it the art? Is it the math? The combination of all? Like, what do people really gel with? And you go like, wow, I saw that person now changed.
You know, I think logic and like this kind of reasoning is extremely important, but mostly to the people who don't listen to their fear and their hatred too high of an extent. But mm-hmm. to the people who do, I think the most powerful tool is exposure. It's when you, we actually have statistics showing that most of the people who have a belief that trans people deserve rights also know a trans person in real life. They have friends or family members or even acquaintances, coworkers who are trans. They have a human to human connection with transgender people and think, yeah, why shouldn't you be able to live as normal a life as I do?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like when something is foreign to you, it's harder to see it as human, mm-hmm. but that, you know, it doesn't have to always be foreign.
So like when you're doing your art, right? Are you thinking about a certain instance of when somebody was fearful or when somebody came out or when somebody experienced, you know, joy or fear? Or what are you thinking about when you're doing your art?
Different things sometimes. I mean, what came to mind as you were asking that is this this chalk mural that I did, and I wrote a poem, and I did a chalk mural of this one girl. She was 16 in the UK. Her name was Brianna Jai, and she was she had been being bullied for her identity. But at 16, she was stabbed to death in a park, like in mid daylight, by 2 15-year-olds. And because of, I don't know if we're keeping up with politics in the UK, but because of the block of a bill that would have allowed for trans people to be buried in dignity, to have their chosen names used when they were buried, her death certificate has her dead name on it and genders her as male. And so I made a mural of chalk out on my patio, of like the picture that was going around of her. And I was thinking as I was making it about how every time this kind of thing happens, and it happens way too often, when a trans person is, or any queer person is just killed for existing, people say, stop politicizing it. People say, stop making this political. It was a terrible, isolated incident that happened. We don't know it was a hate crime, so stop politicizing it. And I was thinking, so now trans people are apolitical. Now right. This isn't a political issue. Anything we do besides die is your problem, is a political problem. But the minute that works exactly as intended, politics are completely irrelevant.
You know, it's amazing that you're saying this, because people arbitrarily change their names every day. You know, like you've got William becomes Bill, all good, you know, and you've got people who take up nicknames, and you've got people who like, call me this. But as soon as it's trans and you want to change your name, it's a problem.
There are so many instances like that. I recently had a conversation with someone who was saying, like, this thing is terrible. I was like, okay, is it terrible when a cis person does it? They're like, no. And their entire reasoning was, that's not abnormal. And I'm like, the word normal has so much power in these conversations when it's completely subjective. And it even the word normal changes all the time. And yet being abnormal is like the entire reason that some people find being trans to be dangerous or harmful or bad.
It's amazing. I mean, if you think about it, you also, you play music, you've got your instruments that you do. Mm-hmm. Music changes and has become something that is, you can look at it as being abnormal. Like when we went from 50s, you know, rockabilly to 60s rock, you know. Yeah. And I suppose we had the same problem there, but people caught on and it's like, oh, it's okay now. So how do you see that with the transphobia and things changing and things being normal?
That's actually extremely interesting to me, because so many of the things that I hear people saying about trans people now are like copy pasted from things that people said about gay people in the 70s. And that's what has me like. One time I was on a thread where people were like, does anyone remember when people were like, don't call me straight, I'm normal? and it was so inspiring to me, because I was like, you know what? I think that means that eventually we're going to be able to have a time period where trans people on Twitter are like, do you remember when people said cis was a slur? Like, and that is something that has always like kept me going through these things where it's like, look at where we came from and look at where we are.
You know what's interesting? I think about things like seatbelts. People were like, don't tell me to wear my seatbelt, right?
I remember that. I mean, not from person, but I've seen.
And things change. Like, I think the biggest thing that will help us get to, you know, trans is normal or whatever, is we need a common enemy. I found that once you have another common enemy, it brings out, it bonds people. So we need an alien to land on the world and go like, yeah, the aliens are common enemy. We're all together. And then after a while, the aliens get to be us and go, oh, we need someone else to be the common enemy. It's like, that's the way people think. They bring in the outside, right?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because when you make that common enemy another minority, like even mm-hmm. within the trans community, a lot of trans people make that common enemy trans people without dysphoria or non-binary people, as in, see, because I'm trans, but I pass. I mm-hmm. transitioned. I pass now and I can fit in with cis people, but those trans people don't. It's this, and you can find this all the way up the ladder of social hierarchy of people yep. trying to get a little piece of privilege by oppressing someone else. And that's interesting to me because, like, I think that as long as we keep making that common enemy other minority groups that yep. are just trying to live, we're never going to find true equality. But I do think we kind of already have a common enemy, and that's the hierarchy itself.
That could be, right? It's just, you need something, or we find something that people bond together over, right? So I don't know that that's the best way to do it, but I've seen as an example, that's what happens. You know, minorities bond together because the majority is oppressing them. And then all of a sudden somebody else comes in the equation and all the groups bond together, which is sad that we need to have a common enemy to make people realize that we're all the same, right?
Yeah, when ultimately it's like, you don't need a hierarchy. You don't need this like idea that someone has to be the ultimate to just live.
Yeah, you don't unless you're in charge and it's like going away and people are seeing it as like, oh my God, my power is going away.
Yeah.
And instead it needs to be like, oh my God, we've got more people coming in. We can share responsibility. We can share the wealth.
Right. Like, power is not happiness. Mm. It's not stability. And it's only useful to those who, like, want to have it over others, which isn't necessary.
Yeah. What do you want if you've got the stage, you've got a giant stadium full of people, and they are all there to hear you speak? And if you could actually, you've got the microphone and it's connected directly to their brain and you want them to believe one thing that you're going to say, what is it that you want people to understand that you're getting across?
Trans and queer people in general are humans. And this is a human's world. So I don't need you to accept people. I don't need you to accept like everybody exactly the way they are. But I do want people to understand that whether or not you can accept me does not determine whether or not we are sharing the world. This is not your world. This is not my world. It is ours. And we have an equal share and responsibility for it, no matter our opinions of each other.
What's the world look like once you get that into everyone's head?
It looks like a world where we can find community and respect with each other and all just help each other be okay, as in not in danger or like at risk of death mostly.
Yeah, it's interesting because once it's accepted, people don't think about it being accepting. It's just the way it is, right? In other words,
yeah,
we don't even have to think about like, what do you mean? Am I accepting it? It's like, it's always been this way, or it should be this way. It's like, that's it.
It's been this way. If this person exists, you don't need an opinion on it. They just exist and they're a person.
Exactly. I think for all marginalized communities, I think that would be a fabulous situation to have happen. So let's find out some more about Lee. We're going to play a game for a second. We're going to play a little bit of this or that.
Ooh.
I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to give you two choices. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. Okay.
Alrighty.
So, and if you have to explain something, we'll let you do that too. Okay.
I'm non-binary and asexual. How dare you force me to pick a side?
There you go. What style do you lean more toward? Abstract or realistic?
Abstract or realistic? abstract for me.
Okay. Pencil
or realistic paint has too many like limitations. I'm like, I can't get it right. There's nothing to get right abstract.
That is so true, right? Yeah, good point. Pencil or paintbrush?
Pencil all the way.
Okay. Geometry or algebra?
Geometry, shapes. Shapes and colors.
Okay. How about solo performance or ensemble piece?
Oh, that's so hard. That's easy. I'm going to go with ensemble. The teamwork and community is just so amazing. Like the most euphoric moments of my life have been like band performances, like on the marching field where it's like we finish a show all together. It's like it's 350 people and we all did that together and we were so good. I've never found a feeling to cap that. So yeah, ensemble.
Okay. How about museum exhibit or street art?
Street art. I think there's something so free about like, look, art is everywhere.
Yeah. Have you ever done graffiti yourself?
No, I
haven't. Not yet?
I'm not trained with spray paint, but the chalk art on the ground is like, it's my first step. I would do a lot of those outside.
There's a lot of, like, people don't know, there's a ton of talent in street art. I mean, it's...
There is. I saw this mural that took up an entire brick wall. It was Marsha P. Johnson. It was in like, the gayborhood part of Dallas. but it was so beautiful. And I loved that.
Yeah. I mean, just the ability to be this far from a piece, you know, that far. And then getting the perspectives right and colors and blending and all that. It's an amazing thing, if you ask me.
Yeah.
How about creativity and mathematics or mathematics and creativity?
Which creativity and mathematics. Yeah. Like, there's an order there. I know I just said no hierarchies, but creativity and mathematics.
Is there a zero or not? That's a weird question, right?
A what?
Zero. Does zero exist?
Yeah, but not as a number. It's not really a quantity.
Okay.
I'm not sure. There's so many debates on this, and
they're
very intriguing.
Okay, activism through words or through art?
It's really hard to not say both because like words can be art. Oh man, I really don't know. It's like they both have their place. I couldn't really give one up. But for the sake of my ADHD and the fact that I probably couldn't talk for as long as I could draw art.
Okay. Art for beauty or art for message? Which drives you as a creator?
Message.
Okay. The strong message you want to get out is?
diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Okay, we'll go with that too. What's your philosophical take on math? Math as a language or math as logic?
I view it as a language in a way because it's like, it works like a language. It's like,
yeah.
It's a way, everything you do in math is a way of demonstrating something in real life. And sometimes it demonstrates those things better than words ever could, where you're like, there's something in the brain that like clicks with that, like, oh, this more than this, so why this thing? It can really clear things up for people.
Okay. What's more powerful in creating change? Individual expression or collective movement?
Collective movement.
Gotcha.
It's there's so much power in numbers. And I think the primary way that all oppressive systems try to stay in power is by keeping people ignorant of that fact, of their own power in community and numbers.
Yeah. Which influence do you think is stronger? Visual art impacting society or society impacting visual art?
Ooh, I might say society impacting visual art. It's, you're also seeing this so much in AI because AI is not actually intelligence. It's just an algorithm that takes a massive, massive field of art and averages out what it sees, which is why AI, as we know it right now, will show extremely bigoted and like stereotypical versions of anything that you ask it to create because of society. It's a reflection of society. And the thing is, we like to think that we're that different, but people aren't exactly that different. Everything that you do create is a culmination of everything that you've ever experienced, of everything that you've thought, which comes from somewhere. So I think that society's impact on visual art is actually so much bigger. But visual art can also go back and like impact them in turn. It's a working cycle, but I would say society's impact is like massive.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to do like an entire show and bring on a panel and do AI versus humanity and see where we end up.
Ooh.
That'll be an interesting show one day.
Yeah, that would be definitely an episode.
So what do you think is the key to lasting change? Rights through legislation or cultural shift?
I would say it's got to be cultural shift, because you can pass, it's actually great. I can't remember which state this happened in. I think maybe Montana, but a school board had put in like policies that like teachers had to out trans kids to their parents, which is extremely dangerous, by the way. And they couldn't use the right bathrooms, couldn't like educate on those things. And the school, like this one school district was kind of just like, no, like, They put out a notice. It was like, we're not going to be complying with that law. And the thing is, like, yeah, like legislation and law enforcement can really only go so far. If the society, if the culture is not backing you up, power in numbers. Like,
I tend to agree. It's got to be a cultural shift. I'm just wondering how we get there. That's the whole question these days, right?
Yeah.
What do you think of art as a mirror or art as a window?
I like to think of it as a window, because the thing is, I'm not just showing you your experience. I'm showing you mine. I'm showing you whoever I want to implement into my art. And this is something that I'm kind of going into animation and production design, because I want to like produce content for the screen. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I would go for as I like start producing content for that screen is that I don't want to just tell my story. I want to tell other people's. I want to give the people who've been denied a stage, that stage and that representation, which would serve not just as a mirror for them, but more importantly, a window for those who've never seen them before, nice. Which would help cause that cultural change.
Let's keep kind of on that same sort of topic, but what's more important for activism? Is it breaking barriers or building bridges?
The thing is that building bridges is something that can't be done from just one side of the bridge. Mm-hmm. But neither is breaking barriers, honestly. I might say breaking barriers, because you can't really build bridges until those barriers are down. And I feel like doing one kind of like breaking a barrier kind of does, it's part of that process of building a bridge. And I think it's on the step that we're on right now.
Okay. How do you approach complex issues? Binary thinking or spectrum thinking?
Definitely spectrum thinking. It's the reason that I'm against like most of this, like legislating on people's medical care, because there's like medicine is so diverse. There are so many different needs that people can go through that only somebody who is that person or is studying that person individually and knows that person individually can really make a good decision for them, which is why making a blanket ban or like statement on a certain type of healthcare is really dangerous, because people need different things.
Gotcha. Last question for you. So what do you think should guide our ethics, universal human rights or contextual cultural values?
Universal human rights, for sure.
Which one do you think we have in the world right now?
I think we have a battle between them. Okay. Because those contextual cultural values have been are very old, and they go way back. And I think a lot of people are really scared of what the world looks like without them, to the point that they start to matter more than people's even lives. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think that's very dangerous. And I think that our cultural values should be inclusive of human rights. And if they're not, then they need to go.
Gotcha. I think you are amazing. And I want people to be able to stay in touch with you for sure.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to show people how to do that. You can get in touch with you on youtube.com at Leaning. I like that, Leaning. Tower of Pizza. For everyone that's listening, that's spelled LEENING, Tower of Pizza, all one word. That's on YouTube. And on Instagram, same thing, Leaning Tower of Pizza, _ at the end of that. And on TikTok, we've got the Leaning, LEENING, Tower of Pizza 5. So what's the easiest way for people to find you out of all three of those?
I think you can find my channels and like actually pretty diverse types of content on all mm-hmm. three. Right now I'm the most active on TikTok. So okay. Yeah, if you're wanting to see most recent stuff, TikTok is definitely the place.
Awesome. I'm going to leave that up on the screen so people can find you. But you're all over the Leaning Tower of Pizza.
Yep.
why pizza?
It's actually funny. The very first place that I had this username was Wattpad, because I don't know, I was starting to write a fan fiction, and I was like, I want it to be a pun. Lee, like a name pun. I was like, Leaning Tower of Pisa. Okay. I don't really like pizza. You know, I like pizza. Pizza's great.
Okay. We'll have to ask you one more this or that. Chicago style thick crust or New York thin crust?
New York thin crust for me. I always get scared of like where's the cheese? I know it's under the sauce.
Oh my gosh. You are amazing. Thank you for being on. And
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
When we do the AI show one of these days, I'm going to look you up and
Kate and thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. And we'll catch you in the future. Bye, everybody.
Thanks so much. Bye. Now that you're good. Thank you.